Welcome to Deep Dive Genre. We start season one with a genre that couldn't be more topical, and very sadly so, war in movies and series. We will take a look behind several productions to get a better feel for what drives creatives to make films and series about such a dark and serious issue. And what makes the German perspective different? Who better to talk to about these questions than Edward Berger? Your Honor, Patrick Melrose, Deutschland 83, and Jack are but a few of the films and series he directed. This German director extraordinaire is currently making waves with his latest film, All Quiet on the Western Front, Im Westen nichts Neues, based on the anti-war novel of the same name by Erich Maria Remarque. The film is also the German Oscar candidate 2022. We talked to Edward Berger via video call for this interview. I do have a somewhat personal connection to the film because my step-grandfather, he fought in World War I. Mm-hmm. And he was born in 1887, so he would have been around 17-ish when he was drafted, so he would have been Paul's age. Mm-hmm. He was actually wounded, and for the longest time he had the bullet in like a little snuff box. And, mm-hmm. you know, as a child, you're fascinated. You see this little ball of lead, but you have no idea what that actually would mean to a person. Just watching your film, the enormity of what that generation went through, sort of wounds that the war left on their psyche and, you know, subsequently all of our psyches, that just really hit me very deeply, which is my long-winded way of complimenting you and your team on this terrific film.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind.
I know you've talked a lot about the film in the last few weeks and probably will be talking about it in the weeks to come. So I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with us.
Of course.
And hopefully give us some insight in the creative process behind Im Westen nichts Neues.
Absolutely. I'll tell as much as I can.
Terrific. When you were a guest in our other podcast about, I think it was maybe a year and a half ago, you mentioned at the time that you were watching a lot of war movies. I was wondering, what did you take away from those films in regards to depicting a war, if anything?
I think nothing specific. It was mostly I wanted to get an overview and a feeling of what had been made. And I'd probably, you know, picked up the things that I didn't like so much. And I said to myself, and made a mental note of what I wanted to avoid when making my own version of this story. But also learning from others how they did it and what I thought was very effective, adapted for my own purposes. But also, you know, visually, I think I didn't want to be only inspired by war films. I saw many, many different films. Mm-hmm. And I think a film, for example, that I really love in terms of how it, you know, has a very distinguished sense of perspective. And I try to, you know, maybe give it, a feeling that in parts comes close to, or, you know, evokes that kind of total immersion into the subjectivity of our hero. A film that does that very well is, for example, Son of Saul. Mm-hmm. But that film obviously is a very tight camera concept, and I didn't want to just do the same thing. And in fact, we almost did the opposite. But still, I took away from that film something that influenced me very much in all of my films, I think, probably.
Mm-hmm. You had two co-writers on the film, if I'm correct. So I was mm-hmm. wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the writing process. Also, obviously, of course, because it is a literary adaptation. So how did the sort of decision process of what to include and maybe where to, you know, veer off from the book, how did that work?
Well, the film came to me as a script.
Oh.
By the two writers, Leslie Patterson and Ian Stokel. Mm-hmm. And they're two British writers who live in America. And I read the script and immediately thought, I want to make this movie. And I did feel, though, that it had a a perspective that was different from mine, mm-hmm. because they aren't German,
yeah.
you know, and obviously, and they told a great story, but it felt more international, or had a perspective that I had seen in other films, mm-hmm. especially also in recent war films like Dunkirk or 1917, for example. It's a perspective also where they are heroes in a story.
Yeah.
And I wanted to incorporate more of the book in our script and more of especially my feeling towards our history.
Yeah.
And that is something only, I guess, someone who grew up in Germany can put into the film. And that's why I took the script and wrote my version of it, or my several versions, you know, that to come to that conclusion, because that was the main reason, you know, to make the film. Yeah. There had been an American film made of this book before, almost 100 years ago. Mostly Americans or Brits are able to tell stories about war because, first of all, they have a hero's perspective, mm-hmm. and they were attacked and they defended themselves, and America was sort of drawn into the war against their will and liberated Europe from fascism, Second World War in this case. And yeah, that gives you, as a filmmaker, I think, a very different perspective on these, on history, perspective also of, you know, often it's combined with heroism or pride. And there's nothing to be proud of in German history, you know, of that last century. We can only feel shame,
yeah.
or guilt or horror and terror. And I feel a certain amount of, a good amount of responsibility towards it. And I walk around with it every day. And so to put that feeling into the film was very important to me.
At the start of the movie, there is quite a harsh juxtaposition. First, you have the beauty and the peacefulness of nature, and then all of a sudden you have the horror of the battlefield. And you really, you know, you jolt the viewers awake and throw them into the reality of this world. However, during the course of the film, I felt nature, obviously you use it, you know, to give the war action and the protagonist some respite. But still, to me, it felt more and more dangerous as well. Like there was a steady, nervous undercurrent while watching, for example, the scenes, you know, where Kat and Paul steal from the French farmer, and that something horrible will happen, which obviously in the end it does, because it's way too quiet and peaceful. How much of that was intended and how much of that was possibly my own projection?
No, I think it's intended. I mean, I think it's almost an inner compass that guides you, that guides me, and to evoke that feeling. Sometimes, and with you, it fell on fertile ground. So I'm very happy that you interpreted it that way. But I think for me, the film is also very much about contrast, about the nature in the beginning is almost a place that we want to go back to, the promised land, somewhere where there's warmth and protection and your mother and mm-hmm. feeding cubs. And, you know, it just feels almost like the promised land,
yeah.
and something that we're about to lose and about to destroy, but also something that we yearn for and that we always want to achieve and get back, but can never have in this film. And so I think the sense of danger, if you juxtapose it with these brutal and very loud war scenes, is implicit. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's wonderful if that came across in your perception.
Absolutely. Sort of building on that, I was also wondering, how did the decision process go in regards to how much of the horrors of war you wanted to show? Because obviously, you know, sometimes it gets quite graphic, although I felt it was always sort of, when it was too graphic, it was more of a sort of out of the corner of your eye, you could sort of sense something horrible was there. How did you, or was that sometimes maybe even on a spur of a moment that you made decisions, okay, we're going to focus the camera on this?
I would say in this film, almost nothing was spur of the moment. We changed things on set, but I mean, there is so much planning has to go into these sequences because so many people need to know what they do and to keep everyone safe mm-hmm. as well. There are explosions, there are tanks that, you know, roll over trenches with people lying underneath. So you need to plan that, you know, otherwise suddenly the trench collapses. You know, it's dangerous. So you really need to plan it. The guns going off with obviously fake bullets, but still you want to make sure that you know exactly how many bullets are in each gun to make sure that the actor knows how many and how many times he can fire. And so everything is really, and then there are also, you know, hand-to-hand fist fights, basically, or bayonet fights that need to be coordinated precisely with a stunt coordinator in order not to hurt someone by accident. And so I think everything, we storyboarded everything of these fight sequences, especially, and then we ticked one off after the other, really each image we shot, all right, we got this one done, now let's focus on the next one. And we literally always went from image to image in order not to get overwhelmed by the sheer amount of work we had to do, and to keep it sort of manageable, because in my head, if I looked at everything, it wasn't, and sometimes I felt crushed under the weight of the amount of work. So we really tried to go from shot to shot. And in terms of the graphic nature of it, well, the book is really graphic and very brutal, probably more brutal than the film. And I was really amazed when I reread it, how graphic it was and how visceral and how physical it was. And I really wanted to transport that feeling onto the screen. And so whatever allowed us to possibly transport it, we tried to make happen through camera, music, art direction, costume, dirty faces, all of that, that tried to transport that almost bestial quality of the story also. I felt we had to be, you know, we're probably much less graphic than a real war, but we had to be very hard to for the audience to watch. I wanted to basically walk a tightrope that go right up to the edge, that you can just watch it and it becomes physically uncomfortable, because everything else would have felt like propaganda to me.
Yeah. You just mentioned music, which is, of course, also very important for the atmosphere of the movie. And there is sort of a distinct musical theme throughout the film, like a audio catchphrase, which made me wonder, how involved were you in the score of the film? Because you've worked with the composer before, if I'm correct. And was there anything that you said you didn't want music-wise that you wanted to avoid, maybe, or something very specific that you wanted for the film music-wise?
I showed Volker the film, and I said two or three things to him when I showed him the film. First of all, I wanted music that I'd never heard before, that felt different from any other film music. And secondly, I wanted music that destroyed the image, that went against the image, that didn't prettify the landscapes or the people. You know, that made it rougher, that basically destroyed images, you know, and punched us in the into the gut. And I also want, and the third one was, I wanted to not emotionalize, you know, or not tell the audience what they're supposed to feel, but to put a score to Paul Bäumer's feeling, to his what he feels in his stomach, the fear, the so I tried to give Paul a music, you know, that runs with him through this battlefield, that is scared, that hates, that is, you know, is yearning for home, that is crying. And I wanted to give him, his stomach, that music. You know? And that those are the three things I said to Volker. And then he went home, and a day or two later, it was really quick, he sent me this duh. It's basically a harmonium that he inherited from his grandmother and repaired at home. And he it's a bit like a piano, but you pump air into the instrument with your feet. There's a big pump in it. And underneath this, these three chords, you always hear like a click and a cluck and pumps and something mechanical. And that, again, is unclean. It's not perfect. And so I just immediately, when he sent me this score, I absolutely loved it, because I felt it was bold and it was big and it was, it destroyed the images. And I had never heard of it before. I'd never, you know, had that feeling before. And so to me, it felt new and different, and that's fitting to the film. And I immediately said, that's it. And then we scored the entire movie around these three notes.
It felt really very clear, very pared down, and went against what you saw on the screen. There was no pathos or false drama in the music. So it fit really well.
And it, despite it being an old instrument, it feels modern to me. You know, it feels electronic, because Volker used electronics to distort it. And I like that as well, that it isn't historical.
Absolutely. Now, a little bit about the cast. Mm-hmm. There has been much made of that there's a lot of not so well-established actors in the main roles. Obviously, there are few well-known names in sort of slightly smaller roles. And I was just wondering, how long was the casting process for, let's say, for the four main roles? And also, maybe you can go a little bit into what preparations the actors had to do, which is sort of a workaround to asking, did they go to a boot camp?
Well, let's start with the main actor, Felix Kammerer. So I was given a picture of Felix maybe in March or April, and we started shooting in January, so 9 months before shooting.
Yeah.
I saw him first and I immediately thought, what a great face. He has a little bit of an old-fashioned face, very transparent, very sensitive. He looks like he's from the gymnasium, which is our A-level. You know, so he looks like a smart boy who's really not made for the trenches either.
Yeah. Yeah?
And so I really wanted to see him. But of course, we want to see everybody. We want to make sure that we really have the best one. So we invited him with, you know, hundreds of other young actors. And by the way, the producer's wife gave me the picture because she works with him. She used to work with him at the Burg Theater in Vienna, which is basically the preeminent theater in Europe, yeah? Or one of them. And so Felix is part of that ensemble there. And we flew him in from Vienna to Berlin. And he was great in the first casting. But he was also, he has a very, you know, he is a dancer also. He has very light movements and very elegant movements. And I thought, okay, how would he look? Like, can I basically bring him a touch closer to earth by putting on heavy boots and a uniform? And so, which he would wear naturally in the film. So next time he came, he wore that uniform and those boots, and he immediately felt almost, you could see him in the trenches, and the uniform really fit him in terms of period. It just felt right. He felt at home in it immediately. Mm-hmm. They're more modern, very modern young men who, where you go, oh, that just doesn't look right on that person. You know, the face is too modern, or the body structure is too modern. Too many muscles, or whatever it could be. So he was great, but we did invite him two more times. So I think he came to four or five castings.
Ew.
And the call to him after, it probably took 3 months, maybe four even, the call to him to say that he's, you know, we'd like to offer him the role was a wonderful one. It was really one of the best calls of my life to be able to call him and say, we would love you in the film. Would you like to join us? So that was a wonderful conversation. And then we went on to all the other ones I cast parallel, basically. And some of them are more well-known. I think, for example, yeah. Albrecht Schuch and Daniel Brühl in the two roles. I knew immediately that I wanted to offer them the roles. So they didn't, you know, there was no casting there. I immediately had them in my mind. And I was so lucky to get both of them. So that was wonderful. But so that was pretty much the casting process. We took a long time because I very much believe in casting. I think directing, a big part of directing is really casting, that you pick the right people to portray it, because I don't believe in changing a person's personality on screen. You know, you'll always bring that personality and,
yeah.
You know, it'll always be part of the film. So you want to make sure it's the right fit in an ensemble, especially with many actors.
Because you mentioned putting people in the uniform, I actually wondered, did you see or feel a difference once the actors wore the uniforms and carried a weapon? Did they talk about if that changed anything in them?
I mean, I liken it to when I put on running shoes. Mm-hmm. I walk very differently than when I put on my tuxedo shoes. You know, it's a different walk. Or hiking boots, you know, you're sturdy on the ground with, yeah, hiking boots, which is probably fairly similar to World War I military boots, you know, probably much lighter, but so you already feel very sturdy. And then in dress shoes, I walk more elegantly and lighter. And so I think shoes influence a lot. Sometimes you even put sort of heavy soles into shoes to make people walk differently. That definitely influences the way an actor walks, the way he feels, the way he behaves. So I think, and I know for sure, it was also a great moment, by the way. We did a test with costumes of each act, makeup and costume test before the shoot. And to see all these kids in, you know, because they are basically kids, they're really young actors, to see them in their uniform and how excited they were about making this film, and the, you know, the light in their eyes a day before the shoot, or 3 days before the shoot, and then immediately, you know, being thrown into this battlefield and being confronted with the mud. I could really understand these kids in 1914 who went to war, who for them, you know, it almost felt similar to me, because for them it must have been a great adventure.
Yeah.
They didn't have news or papers that told them how horrible war was. They had just politicians and a Kaiser who told them how great and glorious it would be, and how they would be heroes. And Germany had just won.
Yeah, they had filtered information.
Yeah, absolutely. Slightly censored, right? Like some other countries today as well. And so they had, and Germany had just won three wars 40, 50 years before, fairly quickly. And so they felt like, oh, we want to be like our fathers, our grandfathers. We want to be heroes too. And so they went out with enthusiasm, with their uniforms, which is in the movie too, and quickly learned that not, you know, that they would lose their innocence and moral ideals very quickly in the mud of the trenches.
Yeah. The color palette of the war is one of darkness, of gray, of mud, and of blood. And I was wondering, were there any particular challenges in regards to catching these colors, or in regards to lighting in general, that you maybe had not expected?
We had planned and tested a lot of it.
Okay.
So there weren't big surprises. The one thing I would say is, of course, we were worried also because it's green, gray, brown, and black, basically, is the color palette. And so it's not very contrasty. So whenever we had the opportunity to put another color into the mix, we went for it. And also in the battles, for example, we thought, okay, it'd be great if they all have different looks. So we were lucky, or no, we actually weren't lucky. So we made snow for the first battle, or made the ground white, you know, whitish or frozen, give it a frozen look. To then the next battle, the sun was slowly rising, was actually quite aggressive throughout the battle, so it has a harsher light. And the last one, again, is very overcast and gray, and it's running towards doom. And so we were very lucky in terms of the weather with those three battle scenes. But the one thing I was really afraid of the entire shoot, that summer would come. We started shooting in early March or late February, and we shot till early May,
okay,
or mid-May. End of May, even. Yeah? But the last 2 weeks we had planned in scenes, for example, in the city and so forth, where the weather didn't matter so much, or where there was even a sunny, summery period in the movie. So that was fine. But I was always afraid that summer would come, you know, suddenly everything would blossom, the sky would be blue, and that I couldn't have that. A blue sky was the worst for us. Yeah? Whenever we had a blue sky day, and we had a few on the shoot,
yeah,
we didn't have the luxury to reschedule and wait. And I would have loved to just say, let's wait till tomorrow. Let's shoot nothing today. Let's wait. But we didn't have the luxury, and we had to shoot in the weather that came there. And so that was a big challenge to incorporate that into the film. There's also, I'm sorry, do you have time for a little anecdote?
Or yes,
is that
of course.
A weather anecdote? So
yes.
There's a scene where it snows.
Yeah.
In the end. And it was one of the most beautiful, it was second day of shooting, actually. It was at 9 a.m. It's a scene in a farm, and we're always outside. And at 9 a.m, it starts snowing. It started snowing. And at 1 p.m, it stopped, and everything was, you know, during the snow, everything was covered in white very quickly.
Yeah.
And 3 hours later, everything had melted and was green again. And of course, in a movie, that's the worst thing that can happen. That is the continuity, the weather continuity gets so messy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that afternoon, we luckily went inside into a barn to shoot inside. But I knew I had to go back outside, and I knew there would be no snow the next day. So I was really worried because I had liked, it's a scene with Albrecht Schuch where he stands in the snow. And it's sort of the foreboding sense of what, you know, might happen in the future. And it's beautiful. It's almost heavenly. You know? And I really didn't want to reshoot this. And I had panicked that I would have to because of the next day being green. And then I had this wonderful producer who came at the end of today, Malte Gruner, best producer of the movie, said, you know what, I really loved what you shot this morning. So I just, you know, made sure wherever we shoot tomorrow, we're going to snow in. You use SFX and VFX snow. Mm-hmm. And I was very, very grateful that we were able to save that footage and have it play in the snow.
Perfect. You mentioned the storyboarding process earlier and that you, you know, obviously it was quite extensive. And I was wondering in regards to the three big battle scenes, how that influenced the camera blocking on the day of shooting. How many days would you say, for example, for the last battle, how many days did you spend on shooting that? If you can even sort of narrow that down.
Yeah, I don't really remember each battle, but I would say we probably had about 5 weeks on the battlefield. Yeah, and maybe for the center battle, it must have been 2 to 3 weeks. And so 4 to 5 weeks on the battlefield, just shooting explosions and people running. And it was pretty nightmarish. And every day that we went to set, I thought we'd never make it. And I almost broke down. And I had a wonderful cameraman who built me up on the way to set. And we built each other up and said, let's just really concentrate on that next shot. And then get that done and then think about the next shot. Because we, in prep, we had really thought like a lot of it through or everything through and everyone knew what to do. So there were no surprises on the day.
Yeah.
It would have been impossible. And if you really want to get what you want to get, you need to plan. Otherwise, things won't be there. People won't be prepped. You won't have enough time to get it because people are scrambling to catch up. And so it's very important to plan this through meticulously down to the last detail. And so we tried that. And so we knew exactly where the camera would come for each shot. Mm-hmm. Very rarely we changed that because of, I don't know, you know, the terrain had changed. And so it's usually we knew and it was all pre-planned. And we knew we need about 30 seconds of this shot or 2 seconds of this shot, or this shot's going to be 2 minutes long. And we want to get it in one. So everything was really planned. And the camera, and if you now put the storyboard next to the film, unfortunately, we only have a podcast, so can't show you. Yeah? But I can guarantee you that it basically is the movie. It's the same. The film is edited and shot the way we storyboarded it. There's very few differences.
How long did the editing process take?
The editing took me about, I would say, I started editing. Well, we edited during the entire shoot, of course. We started in March, and then I was done end of May with the shoot. And early, I started the editing immediately. So end of May till June, July, August, September, October. Definitely 5 months.
Mm-hmm. Were there any particular scenes that you shot that you were sorry to have to cut? Did you cut any important scenes?
No, we cut some, but really not very much. We cut very little because the script was fairly tight and some ended up being superfluous. And so we cut a little bit, but I'm surprised how economical we were in terms of shooting. You know, everything pretty much came into the film or down to almost every, you know, a lot of shots in the scenes as well. So there's nothing and whenever we did cut something, it completely was evident pretty much in the beginning that the story lagged there or got too slow or the scene was too long and we had already gotten the point. So the usual process of cutting scenes, but there's nothing where I felt, oh, too bad that that's not in.
I'm still going to ask, will there be a director's cut or are you pretty happy with this cut?
This is the director's cut, I would say. Yeah, there's no one who said you have to change this or you have to change that. I had support and a lot of creative people around me all the time. And whenever I cut, whenever they had notes, because there are always notes and thoughts for which I'm grateful because I get blind at some point, right? I don't feel anything editing the movie anymore. So I'm reliant on people that I trust to give me their thoughts. Mm-hmm. And whenever I cut something, it's because it's either mine or the editor's instinct, or I got very good thoughts from collaborators like our producer or like Sasha Bühler from Netflix or like my friends and who gave me thoughts and or the cameraman watched a lot too, a lot of cuts. And those influenced the cutting, but I was always thought like, that's a good note. That's much smarter if we cut that, if we change that. nothing is in the film that I can't stand behind. So there's no director's cut. Short answer, no director's cut.
Okay, well, that's exactly how it should be then. A lot of the press coverage that I read for the movie obviously makes a connection to the current state of international affairs. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, it was May when the shooting stopped. So that was already way before the situation in the Ukraine developed. So I'm parsing this question back. Who do you want to see this film and why?
Well, I thought, I mean, first of all, I like that this film, we can share it all over the world.
Yeah.
That it's not, you know, that certain countries can't show it. Wherever we have Netflix, wherever Netflix decides to bring it to the cinemas, and it's quite a few countries, people will be able to watch it in both the cinema and on Netflix a few weeks later. And I immediately thought, when I was asked if I wanted to make the film, I thought, this is a great story to tell also internationally, because Germany has a very singular perspective on the subject of war, because unfortunately we carried two wars into the world in the last century.
Yeah.
And that is, no other country has succumbed to their destructive impulses as much as Germany in the last century. That leaves traces in the world, especially, and scars in the world, but also in us. And we can bring that to the world. And I thought that's a perspective that's interesting for international audiences to see. And in fact, I heard a lot in Toronto that they never thought about it this way, you know, or in America when we showed the film. And so that was interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's the audience, you know, people that are interested, people that know the book, and there's a lot of people, there's a big fan club of the book, people that have heard of the book, the title, especially, you know, I'm sure a lot of people internationally haven't read the book, but know this title. This title is so famous, it's become almost a catchphrase in many different languages. And so for everybody who's interested in the subject matter, it felt like it could be an interesting story to watch.
Well, I actually just talked to David Koss a couple of weeks ago for the other mm-hmm. podcast, and he mentioned that this film is the one that he's looking forward to watching.
Oh, really? How nice.
Yeah, because he really loves the book. And
what a nice man.
That was it.
Okay.
Just last but not least, I just want to say congratulations to you and your team on this achievement.
Thank you so much.
And obviously the film is the German Oscar candidate, so all the best for the award season.
Thank you so much. Fingers crossed. It's a long road, but it's good to be in the conversation.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.